D-Mace Vingen and Donick 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen here with you, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. We are live at Bridgestone Arena for some Predators preseason action. Predators host the Tampa Bay Lightning. The pregame coverage starts at 6:30. Puck drop is at 7, of course, right here on 102.5 The Game. In case you missed it,
Willie looking dapper over there.
Yeah. Willie's got his
I got
business
the second
cash on.
I got the second period tonight, so I'm working the rust off with Chris Mason.
Okay.
So you got to look the part, you know?
Yeah, I feel you. I feel
look
you,
the part. And it's our first birthday. So
it is.
Hey.
Today,
I wanted to look sharp.
Is the first birthday of D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick.
Yes. We're gonna tweet out footage of the candle ceremony, the cupcake candle blowout ceremony.
Absolutely. Yes.
And by the way, this means that Adam Vingen is no longer a rookie host.
He's not.
He's no longer eligible for rookie of the year. He has now moved on to.
He's a vet.
He's a veteran.
I'm a veteran.
2 year
now.
Vet. Or as Marv Albert used to say all the time, the second year man. The second year man from American University.
At the risk of sounding sappy, thank y'all. Thank y'all for listening. We appreciate you on our first birthday. All right. So we've talked Brian Callahan. We haven't really discussed in depth the other major piece of news involving the Tennessee Titans today, and that is that the Tennessee Titans have traded Jarvis Brownlee Jr. to the New York Jets for a 2026 sixth-round choice. It was Brownlee and a 2026 seventh-round pick for a 2026 sixth-round pick. And at the top of the show, we had Paul Gaharsky from paulgaharsky.com, and I said to him, is this the first domino to fall as the Titans look to trade assets? And he said, well, usually in these situations, it's a veteran player that gets traded first. Because what three-word slogan have we heard from Chad Brinker and Mike Borgonzi ad nauseum over the past couple of years?
Draft, develop, retain.
Draft, develop, retain. Well, the Titans did one of those things. When it comes to Jarvis Brownlee, they drafted him. Not really sure they developed him. They developed him, and they sure as hell didn't retain him. So Jarvis Brownlee out the door seems to run counter to everything that this front office has preached. Now, we have people in the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, people on the YouTube chat. Derek, you even did so yourself before the show, speculating that something must have happened for Jarvis Brownlee to be traded. But this is a surprise to me. Say what you will about Jarvis Brownlee, a young player who was thrown into the fire last season probably before he was ready. L'Jarius Sneed was dealing with injuries. Chidobe Awuzie was barely on the field. So Jarvis Brownlee saw more action last season than I imagine the Tennessee Titans anticipated when the season began. He took a lot of penalties. He took 3 penalties in week 1 at Denver, so he was a little flag happy, I guess you could say. So say what you will about Jarvis Brownlee, he was certainly an unfinished product. But I thought that was the point of this, was to find those unfinished products and develop them into finished products and then retain them. That's the whole point of draft, develop, retain. It's pretty simple. So this surprises me.
Yeah, I think it would surprise anybody because this is their starting corner. He was just in the game the other day. He was a guy.
Well, he was out the other day.
I mean, not the other day, but last
week. But he was
week.
Your opening day
starter?
Yeah,
he was your opening day starter 2 weeks in a row. He didn't start because, obviously, he was injured, so they made him inactive. But was he that injured that he – because now you got to start trying to put this stuff together. Was he that injured to a point where – he couldn't play, or were you thinking about trading him anyway, so you didn't want to expose him to an injury? A guy, because my thing is, if I'm another team, why am I trading for an injured guy, like a guy that may not be able to play for me?
So are you saying that he was injured and not injured? He was injured. Wink, wink.
I'm saying that I believe – And Paul sort of alluded to it by his response to the holding. Maybe that did rub them the wrong way.
Well, Denard Wilson was up front about Jarvis Brownlee needing to stop taking penalties. He did not sugarcoat it. Sure. Like,
but as you said, Adam, but this is part of the process of molding your starting quarterback.
But you don't cut him, which tells me there was a disagreement between the player and the coaching staff. And it came to a point where you do not fit the culture we are trying to – that's basic.
But
people
how does that
say,
happen so fast?
Say,
he was here the whole year last year with the same coaches.
It didn't happen fast, Willie. This has been building up, I believe.
But there was no hint of that until today.
Because,
I'm surprised.
Because you saw it last year and you said, okay, over the offseason, we're going to explain to him these are the things we want him to do. And he's a hard worker, so he's going to go out there, and I believe he's working hard and he's working not to do those things. But then you come back and first game of the season, first two games of the season, you are one of the most penalized defensive backs in the National Football League.
I do not believe.
You were the most penalized defensive back in the National Football League last year.
He was up there last year. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, he played against the Rams, right? He did not play against the Colts.
Yeah,
I don't believe he was flagged against the Rams, but he was flagged three times against the Broncos.
Exactly. So there is something, there's a disconnect between he, the coaches, and now the organization. Because either it came from below and got filtered up top, or it came from up top and got filtered below, and they were like, listen, we're done. Because you just don't draft a guy last year. He shows some promise. He's a player. You got to fix some of the – you just got to fix the holding. You fix the holding, he's a damn good player. But you're telling me he has the potential – you can't fix the holding to a point where he can't remain on the team. That tells me, as a former player, there's something going on.
But why?
It may not be.
Okay.
That may not be the case. But as a former player, I'm looking at it as he rubbed somebody the wrong way. This has been a clash since after the first game. It may even be before that. But they've been clashing. And his response, meaning Brownlee's response, didn't sit well with the coaching staff. And they don't believe it's going to change. So they're trying to get – he doesn't fit the fabric they believe. I'm not saying it. They believe he doesn't fit the fabric and the culture we are trying to establish here in Nashville. So we're going to trade him, and maybe he can fit there.
Okay, that's fine. If you were a veteran team that had a lot of corners – and you are not in a rebuild.
But this is when you do it now.
You can bench him.
This is when you do it now.
Why not bench him?
You have Jalen Armour-Davis off the waiver wire. Why can't you play him?
This is my point.
You don't bench him because.
They just got done. They made a big speech on the day that they picked Jordan Armour-Davis off the waiver wire, how hard it is to find corners. You don't give a corner away that you just drafted last year.
You don't bench him because then it becomes more of a problem. You know this player better than anybody.
It better be more than just a disagreement with the coaches or not being coachable.
I'm just telling you.
I better find out when he's in the air to New York that he did something off the field that is unforgivable.
No. Coaches,
you cannot trade a starting corner in the league for nothing.
I've seen
it
happen.
They gave him away.
Willie, I've seen it happen before.
He showed some promise.
There don't need to be nothing outside of the football building that he's doing. If they feel
But why would you give him away for nothing? You don't have anybody else.
Listen, Willie, I am trying to tell you. That is for them to decide why they chose to
bench
do that.
Bench him.
But no.
Deactivate him. Send a message that way.
You don't do any of that. If you feel, I'm just telling you.
They got nothing.
I'm telling you what organizations think. This is why I believe this all didn't just happen yesterday or today. This has been something that has been brewing. And they just felt, listen, I'm just telling you by experience. I don't necessarily know what happened, but I'm telling you by experience, judging by the situation, and this kid has talent, I am telling you, it came to a head. They were done with it.
Why are the Jets not done with it?
Because the Jets, just like any GM out there, I can fix him. Don't worry about it. He can fix our culture. This is what they don't need for anything to happen outside the field. He doesn't, and I'm just going by what I'm seeing. In their mind, he doesn't fit what they want to do and where they're going as an organization. So you know what? Let's trade him away now. because if we bench him, it's going to cause a distraction. If we deactivate him, it's going to cause a distraction. So you know what? If there's somebody out there willing to take him, we need all the picks that we can get. It may end up being more. We need all the picks that we can get. So we're going to send him away. We're not winning anytime soon. We're not winning. So
well,
I am going to try to get something for you because obviously you don't fit what we're doing here from a schematic standpoint because you're still holding. But then probably from a culture standpoint because y'all just ain't – for whatever reason, y'all not vibing right now.
If they got a fourth rounder – or even a fifth rounder, I could see it.
Who going to give up a fourth?
They lost value on Jarvis Brownlee.
They traded a starting corner in the league.
Who was a fifth-round pick, if I'm not mistaken.
They gave up a seventh to get the sixth. So they moved up. I don't know how many slots that's going to end up being. But not that many. It's a giveaway for your – what I think it's – look, there is something that happened behind the scenes that we don't know. I agree. But it better be really bad for you to give him away like that.
Listen, the kid has talent. I understand that. And I thought about this with Brownlee because he reminds me a lot of Ed Reed. And I think they are cousins. I do believe they are cousins. But he reminds me of his demeanor, listen, I know what I'm doing. And, you know, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to get it fixed. I'm not going to – it's just – He doesn't – I'm not sure his personality fits here with this team. And it's not a bad personality. I'm just saying, some personalities
– But he was there all last year with the same coordinator.
But it doesn't matter. It comes to a point where you try to make it work. He's a rookie. You draft him. You bring him in. You see some things. You try to fix him. It's not working out. You know he's a good player, but you just know that now he doesn't fit what you want to do
as
a team.
I get that, but
he
I'm
may
just
go
playing
to New York
advocate.
And be
you made him a starter.
Yeah,
he must have done something
right.
Well,
he has the talent. He has the talent, but they don't. And I hate to say this because I don't want because I think he's a good kid, a young man. Let me not say kid. I think he's a good young man. I think he's going to be a really good player if he can get away from the holding, learn it, just trust what he's doing because he got his technique. He just needs to trust what he's doing, and he hasn't because that's why he grabs. His personality and who he is as a player, I think, may clash with this team and this defensive staff. He may go somewhere else. He's going to the Jets. It may work with their head coach, Glenn, and him. It may work that way, but it just didn't work here. That doesn't mean that he's a bad player. That doesn't mean that the Titans made a mistake. It just didn't work here. So, if it's not working, let's send him somewhere else and get something for him. Because it continues, we ain't going to be able to get nothing
right,
for him.
Right, but now you're down him. You've got the scraps that you've got. And you've got another corner in L'Jarius Sneed, who you're very thankful has been able to play so far, surprisingly so. But he is still a big injury risk. So you're taking a position where you need a ton of depth that they have virtually none. Mm-hmm. I don't get this. Something has to have happened behind the scenes that was unforgivable. Because from a football standpoint, I cannot be convinced that even if all that you say is true in the locker room, he's not getting it, he's not responding, he's committing too many people. He was your starter through two weeks. He played against the Rams. He was out there against the Rams. He got it. He was on the injury report. I don't know if that was the start of something happened in there where he was, your theory, Adam, maybe he was injured part of it, but there was another part of this. I don't know, but this is shocking to me.
Let's get to some of your reaction on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. One texter says, I'm assuming Mike Borgonzi ultimately made the move, but which coach came to him telling him Jarvis was too far gone to coach and had to go? I fire that coach for the inability to do his job before trading the player. That is from Blake on our text line. Dustin from Hopkinsville says, if I know one thing, my Titans are foolish. I'm going to blame them till I have indisputable evidence it was on Brownlee. I hate my damn Titans, no doubt. I hate my Titans. It's that toxic relationship you're in. Everyone says, get out. We fight constantly. There's nothing left, but I'm comfortable. She's attractive. I keep holding on knowing damn well I need to leave. Some of those calls on him, if he were a tenured player, they wouldn't call on him, meaning the penalties on Bradley.
I agree. He had a reputation early.
Some were questionable.
He doesn't get any breaks.
Some were questionable calls, in my opinion. He's good. At least he's freaking trying to go play ball. Skyler on our text line says, I agree with Willie. I don't like that. Brownlee is somebody you're trying to draft in the later rounds. They must not like the penalties.
I'm not sitting here saying that Brownlee's – I think Brownlee's a hell of a player. It surprised me that they did trade him. I'm like, why would you trade that's really the best corner you have? Because the other corner is Snead, he's still up and down. I don't know if he's quite healthy yet. He's the best corner you have, so why would you trade him? But I'm just giving y'all, you know, my experience.
And we understand that.
When I talk about this, it's like there are things that – because when you cut a guy, when you release a guy or cut or trade a guy this early, this isn't something that just happens on a whim unless, you know, like Willie said, you did something outside of the football building and matter of time, it's going to be found out. So they're just – and they know it's true. They're just getting rid of you now. But usually if something like that happens, the NFL comes out first. Everybody comes out before the story even comes out and them even, you know, dismissing you from the team. All I'm saying is that with Jarvis Brownlee, maybe his style of play – well, obviously it doesn't. His style of play does not work here. He's more of an aggressive grab you
but is it
type
Snead
of
the same?
No, not necessarily.
Snead gets penalized all the time for defensive holding. He just got it. It's the same thing.
Yes, but he's an established veteran guy. He's not going to get all, you know, there are guys they allow get away with holding. Same thing Brownlee was doing. Some guys are allowed to get away with it. But he won the holding. It's still a problem with him. But then, two, I just don't think from their standpoint, I don't know because I'm not saying that he's a bad kid or anything else. I'm not saying that he did something in the locker room. That's not what I'm saying. My experience tells me that there's a disconnect there, and they can't get through to him as far as this is, you know, the holding and all this other stuff. And he's probably getting frustrated because he's like, man, this is me. This is how I play. You know, they're calling BS calls. But how do you want me to play another? I can play another way. Then I'm going to get beat all the time. So now all of that has come to a head. They had to trade him. There's no benching. There's no being deactivated. There's none of that. You just got to move away from the player and allow the player to go and start anew somewhere else.
Let's quickly go to Brandon on our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com. Brandon, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Yeah, so thank y'all. Derek, I agree with you. I think my thing is when it comes to the Titans, it's just a losing organization. I feel like these players, you can just see it. Like I'm watching the replay. And, Derek, I got a question for you. These guys, the boys had the ball at the 49-yard line with 3 minutes and 5 seconds left to go before halftime with three timeouts. What do you say to your team when you say, hey, we're just going to go for a field goal, we're going to stop playing and just go run from the 50-yard line and bank on a 65-yard field goal when you're already down by double digits? Like, to me, when you see so many players on the, you know, from other teams that played with the Titans, from AJ to Jeremy McNichols this past weekend to, you know, Dory and some of the other guys there. I mean, these are former Titans who's going elsewhere contributing. It could be Brownlee just needs another situation and he will succeed in another situation because our program right now is just a super losing program. And I just want to hear what you guys have to say about that piece of it, because to me, Callahan is like y'all said already, the dead man walking, because you can't tell me that you're just going to focus on the game management when you have three timeouts, you're at the midfield, you're down by, you know, 10 points, 11 points, and you choose at that point to stop playing to go for a field goal. That doesn't make sense, regardless on if you are calling the plays or just managing the game.
Thank you, Brandon.
Quickly, I think sometimes Brian Callahan coaches from a standpoint of him in the past. He's coaching based upon his blunder he did a few games ago. So everything he does now, instead of just being in the moment and coaching in the moment, he's thinking, I can't do what I did last time.
He's playing it safe.
Yeah. Well, just coach. Just coach. Trust yourself. That's why now they're allowing him to just coach now. You ain't calling plays. You ain't doing nothing. Just go out there and coach.
I think that's
now
a good theory. I agree with that theory. He's in his own head a little bit. He hears the criticism. Mm-hmm. He's trying to do
a lot. They can say all they want.
Back
I don't
off
read
a little bit.
And all this other stuff. Yes, they do. They hear it.
615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. I'm glad that we have our next guest on the show today because I think he can provide invaluable insight. ESPN NFL analyst Dan Orlovsky will join our program coming up next. We'll get his thoughts on the Titans' decision to, or Brian Callahan's decision, quote-unquote, to cede play calling duties. We'll ask him about Cam Ward, and we'll do all of that next with ESPN NFL analyst Dan Orlovsky, 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. D-Mace Vingan and Donick, 1025 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. We are pleased to be joined on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, by ESPN NFL analyst Dan Orlovsky. Dan, thank you so much for joining us today. How are you?
I'm doing great. Good to be with you.
Thank you, Dan. We are glad to have you on today after the news in Titans land that Brian Callahan has handed over his play-calling duties to the quarterback coach. I want to ask you a philosophical question about that. Roughly half the head coaches in the NFL also call plays. Now, Brian Callahan was on this list. He no longer is. What does it take to be successful at that? And based on what you have seen, why wasn't Brian Callahan cut out to handle both responsibilities?
Yeah, you hopefully got a lot of time. So what does it take to be successful? I think that, you know, there's a feel and a art and a rhythm to play calls. You know, one of the things I say all the time is it's not the call, it's when you call it. All the great play callers I've been around, they're one, constantly gathering information of what the defense is doing to personnels or looks or formations. Two, they're constantly building sequencing. They're leaving breadcrumbs to help other and further play calls down the road. And you call them at the right times, and it's an information and it's a feel thing. And I think those are the trademarks, obviously having good players executing, obviously. but those are the trademarks. And then why hasn't gone well for Cali? You know, there's a lot attached to it, the offensive line and their roller coaster performance, the quarterback changes, the perimeter players maybe not being as consistent as needed. And so there's a lot that goes into making it work.
Dan, you have not been shy about your fandom of Cam Ward and his potential at the NFL level. Through his first three NFL starts, which aspect of his game has impressed you most? And on the other hand, which aspect of his game do you think still needs the most work?
Yeah, I lost you there for a second. Hopefully, you're talking about Cam and what needs work.
Yes, I would love to know which aspect of your game, which aspect of his game, I should say, has impressed you the most through three starts, and on the other hand, which aspect you think still needs the most work.
Yeah. What's impressed me is just the natural ability to throw the ball into tight windows and the willingness to do it, the gumption, the courage, the candidly, the balls to try to fit balls in NFL windows. I love that as a rookie. I think that's what rookies should do. I think his arm is so loose in a good way, you know, that ball jumps off of his hand and he can drop it into certain angles that are, it's special and still be accurate. So I love that. I think he sees the field clean right now. For the most part, it's not perfect. And he's doing the right thing with the football on a consistent basis. The two things that are just going to have to, you know, like really get developed as the season goes on, and candidly, the off season is, one, you got to let plays die in situational football, because you never want to take the talent away from the guy. Like everyone says, you know, these players, they gotta learn to throw the football away. Yeah, but then that takes the special away. So situationally, let plays die. You know, if it's third and three, third and four, and you're at your own 40-yard line, and you try to go make a play, I'm good with that. If it's third and one, and we're on the 25, and you try to go do something crazy when you know we're going for on fourth down, then we got issues, okay? So let it die. And there's still moments when he just doesn't set his feet properly because he doesn't have to all the time. I think that's a dangerous position to constantly think it's okay to be in. So when you have the opportunity to set your feet, let's set our feet and drill the football rather than not, because we're capable of doing it.
We'll talk with Dan Orlowski, ESPN NFL analyst. Now, Dan, now that Callahan has relieved himself of his offensive coordinator duties, how much does it change for Cam Ward now that Bo Hardigree is the OC? Does it change it much, especially now that he's still developing as a quarterback?
Yeah, I don't. I've been a part of a play caller change in the NFL midseason. It didn't change a lot early. You know, that initial 2 or 3 week stretch, you don't have. You know, you just don't have a time in the mental horsepower to overhaul things. I think throughout the season, you can make alterations and change some things, do more of or do less of. You can change some verbiage and whatnot. But my perspective is this, is maybe Callahan taking a step back and saying, I'm so close that I can't see it. You know, and so hopefully this allows him to take a step back, new play caller, but he could have a different vantage point of, you know, maybe what they have to get to, what's the adjustment, how the defense is playing against them, and he can spend more time on thinking about what the next step is in game rather than, okay, I got to have this conversation, and we got to talk about this. And maybe he won't be too close where he can make some adjustments.
Now, as far as Callahan moving forward, what does he have to do to retain his job? Because obviously he no longer is in control of the offense on the day of the game. I understand that he still will be giving his input during the week, but on game day, those are no longer his duties. Is it just winning that will save his job, or do they need to see better with the game-to-game operations with the head coach?
No, they got to win. I mean, they got to win, and it can't be, you know, these non-consistent, almost fluke-style wins. They got to play better football. They got to play cleaner football. Got to manage the football game better. And they're going to have to win games. That's you know the nature of that business, and especially one that has a young, talented quarterback in his first year. We have a lot of evidence in the NFL that, you know, that coach that gets, quote-unquote, held on to for the following season, it doesn't go that swimmingly well. So, I think that there's got to be clean football operation. They got to be ahead of situational moments. He's got to manage everything really well, and there's no question about it. They got to win.
We're talking to Dan Orlowski, tremendous analyst of the NFL for ESPN. And Dan, you have a unique perspective on Brian Callahan because you overlapped him in Detroit way back when.
Yeah.
Tell me, has it surprised you at all that he has struggled this much with some of the stuff that he's being criticized for?
Yes, because, you know, when I was with Cali, I mean, one, grew up in the football family. Like, you know, he's been around football his whole life. Obviously, his dad, one of the all-time greats. When I was with him, you know, he was young, hungry, intelligent, eager to learn. And he was around really good quarterbacks. You know, he had been around Matthew Stafford. He had, you know, guys like Peyton Manning. You know, he had watched it and been around it at a really high level and been around some really good head coaches, really successful head coaches, obviously Joe Burrow, Zach Taylor. So I'm surprised in a way, and there's also just the reality, guys. I'm rooting for a friend. You know, I'm pulling for my friend to do well. I also know that this league is unbelievably difficult, and just because you are in a certain role doesn't mean you're going to do well in it or thrive in it, and it doesn't make you a bad coach. You just might be bad in that role, and so listen, there's not a ton of great head coaches in that league. There's some, and they stand out. And it's a hard job. It's a hard job to do well.
You've had some great insight on the art of play calling. I'm curious, as you watch and evaluate the Titans, I would imagine you're evaluating how you call plays for that group as opposed to, say, a loaded roster like we saw last night with the Lions, where you have all of these playmakers all over the field. How difficult do you think it is for any play caller when you have a rookie quarterback, you've got an injured right tackle, you have a lot of inexperience at wide receiver, and your best wide receiver is really struggling in Calvin Ridley? That's got to be very tough for any play caller.
Oh, big time. You know, great coaches are because of great players. I would tell you this, one of the, if not the best play caller I've ever been around, I'll give you two, would be Gary Kubiak and Sean McVay. And I would tell you the one thing that those guys did that had so much in common was every single play started with, how do we block it? Can we protect it? And if they couldn't or didn't feel good about it, and I'm talking about multiple fronts and multiple pressures, if they couldn't, they wouldn't call it. And, you know, when you have an offensive line that maybe isn't capable of doing a lot of stuff, it shrinks your options, right? Because you can't get to all kinds of different plays because you can't get to all kinds of different protections. And so, yeah, it's the health of the offensive line. It's the capability of the offensive line and the quarterback and the running back. You know, everyone's got to be able to protect certain things. And so when you can't do that, that's hard on a play caller because there might be a lot of things that you would love to get to that you just know you can't. Or you go, we got to do more and we got to diversify. And you might be doing things that deep down inside you know you shouldn't be doing or can't do because of that first starting point of protection. So, you know, when you're struggling in that, it's hard. It's hard to call plays. It's hard to sequence plays.
Dan, if they called you in and said, hey, look, it's essential that Cam Ward get through this firestorm that he's going through. Everything is riding on him making it. We know the track record of how many young quarterbacks don't make it based on all that goes around them. What's the best advice that you could give them to say, this is how we're going to keep Cam Ward moving in the right direction while we figure everything else out?
Yeah, so number one, I would make sure that we got in a room with Cam Ward and say, I want you to continue to play to your style mentality-wise. I want you to continue to be aggressive with the football. I don't want you to worry about wins and losses right now. Easy for me to say, my job's not on the line, but that, I'm just being honest. I want you to learn how to play this position at this league or in this league at this level and be process-driven about it. The second thing is I would want to get into a room with everybody on offense and say, stylistically, are we playing in a way that allows our whole offense, not just the quarterback, in 2025 to play at the right way? And that's not living in the shotgun, and that's not catch and throw, and that's not heavy RPO. It's not 2019 and 2020 anymore. So I would stylistically go, we have to put our young quarterback under center more. We have to build more multiple tight end packages. We have to play action pass, and we have to make sure that we are building in protections down the field. I think the second thing is, every single Tuesday, I would be on the field with him for an hour working his fundamentals. Every single Tuesday. And then every day of practice for 20 to 30 minutes, we are working one-on-one with your fundamentals. Fundamentals. Because if his fundamentals clean up, everything will take care of itself. But in the NFL, during the season, you pay such little attention to that, specifically with young quarterbacks, because they just want to win. And that's when bad stuff habit-wise gets created.
ESPN NFL analyst Dan Orlovsky has been our guest on D-Mace, Vingan, and Dunnick. Dan, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it.
Be well, guys. Thank you.
Dan Orlovsky on the program. We will react to what Dan had to say. You can as well at 615-737-1025. By the way, our show is presented by Bax Homeworks. Financing options are available to make your remodel easier than you think with Bax Homeworks. You can find them online at BAXHomeworks.com. Willie Dunnick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 102.5 The Game.
Has it surprised you at all that he has struggled this much with some of the stuff that he's being criticized for?
Yes, because, you know, when I was with Cali, I mean, one, grew up in the football family. Like, you know, he's been around football his whole life. Obviously, his dad, one of the all-time greats. When I was with him, you know, he was young, hungry, intelligent, eager to learn, and he was around really good quarterbacks. You know, he had been around Matthew Stafford. He had, you know, guys like Peyton Manning. You know, he had watched it and been around it at a really high level and been around some really good head coaches, really successful head coaches, obviously Joe Burrow, Zach Taylor. So I'm surprised in a way. And there's also just the reality, guys. I'm rooting for a friend. You know, I'm pulling for my friend to do well. I also know that this league is unbelievably difficult. And just because you are in a certain role doesn't mean you're going to do well in it or thrive in it, and it doesn't make you a bad coach. You just might be bad in that role. And so, listen, there's not a ton of great head coaches in that league. There's some, and they stand out. And it's a hard job. It's a hard job to do well.
That was ESPN NFL analyst Dan Orlovsky moments ago on our program. If you missed that interview, I highly suggest you go back and listen to it. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts. We don't have it up yet because it just happened, but we'll have it up soon. So let's react. Willie and Derek, your main takeaway. Let's start with Willie. Your main takeaway from our conversation with Dan Orlovsky.
I think the main takeaway, I really paid attention to his last answer, which is, to me, what everything is riding on. Whether you keep Brian Callahan or not, everything is riding on. You have to find a way to keep developing Cam Ward throughout this. The word that I would pretty much like to use, I can't say on the radio, but the storm, right? The firestorm that's going on. In the midst of that chaos, you have to get him through and have him reach his potential. I don't know. We were going to, before they did this, do a big roster breakdown of the two teams we watched last night. Another really good Monday night game.
Let's save that for tomorrow.
Yeah, I think we're going to. But here's one thing I thought of. And I'm watching the Lions and the Ravens, and I'm thinking to myself, the Titans are a long way from having a roster.
They're playing
like
a different
two.
Sport, it looks like.
Well, no, they're not playing a different sport. They don't have the players. How many drafts, how many moves would it take to have a roster like that? And let's not forget, it took the Lions a couple of decades to build, to get to the point where they built that team. Then they started getting some traction about 4 years ago. They started stringing together good drafts. They draft smart. They made a very smart trade with Matthew Stafford. And they arguably have the deepest roster in football. The Titans are a long way away from that. But in the meantime, they hope that they have their quarterback. And that's a hard way to do it. What is Cam Ward going to do in the meantime while they build this roster, which I think is going to take at least 3 years now when I look at it? It is unrealistic to think that they could be, now maybe they can get to an 8-9, 9-8 kind of thing in a couple years, but it's going to take some time. And they almost are better off being really bad this year and then finagling and see if they can get a lot of picks out of it. So I was paying attention to Orlovsky's points of some things he might think about of how do I get Cam Ward through this where he doesn't sacrifice his habits mechanically while the plays are breaking down all around him. I think that's real sound thinking.
This is not a good team. That's my synopsis of it. It's not a good team. And Dan said as much. He believes they have a good quarterback. The play caller, he said it. I mean, listen, I'm a friend. I'm rooting for him. But it hasn't gone well. And, you know, that's why I asked him the question, you know, what is it going to take? Because, you know, a lot of times, because the Titans didn't come out at the beginning of the year and say it's going to take X amount of wins. They didn't. They made sure they didn't do that. What they said is we want to see development. All right. Well, in three weeks going on four, you haven't seen any development outside of the quarterback somewhat. Your young receiver, he looks good and promising. Your returner looks good and promising. But as a whole, you haven't seen any improvement as a team. So they strip you of your, you know, or you give up your ability to call plays. And he said this is basically it for him. Now, if they don't win, it's no more, at least it seems like to Orlovsky, it's either you win or you're going to be shown the door. And I think Brian Callahan realizes that now. And maybe this will be a blessing for him in the sense of there will not be as much anxiety before the game or during the game. I got to make every play work. Now you just sit back and you just hope that you can, you know, be a facilitator now. That's all you are, is a facilitator, CEO. You're just managing everybody now. Everybody else is going to do the work. Let's see how well you manage a bunch of grown men now, not just your players, but including your coach.
A couple of reaction texts on our text line driven by Wilson County. Hyundai.com. Brandon says, sounds like Dan needs to be in the building. Well, I do believe Dan Orlovsky has taken coaching interviews in the past. Randy on our text line says, I love what Dan had to say about – this is all over the place, Randy. I love what Dan had to say and was explaining, especially working on the fundamentals. Do you believe the current coaching staff is thinking about those types of concepts, or are they not experienced enough to use some common sense?
I think they are thinking about how to develop this quarterback. They would be foolish not to. So I'm not going to sit here and, make that proclamation that they don't know. No, they are trying to develop this young man the best way they know how. They're doing the things that I believe you should do for a young quarterback. Things are not – your team is just not good. That's what it boils down to. And you're trying to develop your quarterback through – you're trying to develop your quarterback in a situation that is not advantageous for him. That's what you're trying to do. But you're not the first team that has went through it, and you won't be the last team that is going to go through this. Anytime you're picking first overall, it's for a reason. Your team has been bad for a few years. It just didn't fall off. You just didn't fall off the cliff in 1 year unless you had injuries. This has been a build-up to the number one pick. And when you get the number one pick, that means your team's not good all around. And that's what he's dealing with.
And I think and Chip from Mount Juliet makes this point on our text line. Cliff Kingsbury has failed at coaching stops, better coordinator than head coach. And sometimes it's as simple as that. There are coaches out there who are not cut out to sit in the big chair. It happens. And we've seen it in all sports. So Brian Callahan may not be, or likely appears to not be, cut out to be, well, or maybe definitely. I don't know. Maybe I should be more decisive about it. Brian Callahan does not appear to be head coach material in the NFL.
But is he coordinator.
He gets a chance to show that he can be a coach if you take away the play calling duties. Yeah. Let's see if it looks better. He's getting an opportunity to do that, which some would say he's probably fortunate to get that opportunity. Some organizations probably would. You said this in the first hour, D. Mason. I hadn't thought of it, but I think I agree that they are showing a certain amount of patience because I think there have been organizations before that would just pull the plug on the just say get him out of there. Let's give the fans their red meat and just get him out.
The bloodlust. Was the bloodlust quenched at all today?
Yes.
Callahaters 615-737-1025.
Yeah, I think so.
A little bloodlust.
Yeah.
They gave you dabs.
The thirst for blood was quenched.
You got some. Maybe you're still some animals and not like the full five humans like some vampires.
You're still
like
a little parched.
Vampire movie.
You're still a little parched, but you aren't. Your bloodlust was quenched a little bit. Yeah, your thirst for blood.
Thinking
was
of vampire movies where like, hey, these wild animals they're turned up dead. How did that happen? And people are like, it's the vampires. It's the vampire. Watch out!
And
some of the townspeople go, vampires? What are you talking about? There's no vampires.
Lo and behold,
they're in your living room now.
But here is his chance to try to concentrate on the things that can help a team be the best they can be. With him being the head coach, focus on that. That's all he can do. And the rest will take care of itself, right? There's no question he's on the outside looking in, right? That the assumption is going to be he's not going to make it. They're going to make a change at the end of the year. He gets a chance to audition week to week to try to see if he can make it better this way.
615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We are flying by the seat of our pants today, folks. Most of the time, I have a detailed grid I send to Willie, I send to Derek, I send to David. After all of this happened, I said, no grid. We're just going to fly by the seats of our pants, and you're helping us out. 615-737-1025. We will take your reaction to the news about Brian Callahan. We will take your reaction to the news about Jarvis Brownlee. There was an interesting report that came out about Jarvis Brownlee over the past 20 minutes or so, 20, 30 minutes. We'll get to that coming up next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingit, 1025 The Game.